Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll be discussing the article by Arnold et al. Titled Autonomic Regulation of Heart in Spontaneous Hydronephrosis, which published online ahead of print on April 1st, 2011. Joining me are Associate Editor Nancy Kanagi, First Author Amy Arnold, and Lead Author Deborah Diz, as well as leading expert Carrie Scrogan. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. In this study by Amy Arnold and co-workers in Dr. Deborah Diz's laboratory, they looked for alterations in the central regulation of cardiac function in rats that develop spontaneous hydronephrosis. Now, in these male Hanover Sprague-Dawley rats, there's a high rate of spontaneous nephrosis. This condition is also very common in humans, being the most common birth abnormality in infants, although it usually resolves in pediatric patients. However, in adult patients, such as patients with kidney stones, enlarged prostate, tumors in the urogenital tract, it can persist and it can cause permanent damage to the kidneys. Now, this study took an interesting turn to the condition and looked for a potential complication, that is a reflex decrease in baroreceptor sensitivity. And this condition then is known to predispose to heart failure. Therefore, this study sets up a potential long-term complication of a very common renal abnormality in cardiac care. So now we're going to go to the authors, and we have a couple of questions. First to Amy, if you want to talk a little bit about the incidence of spontaneous hydronephropathy, it seemed very high in this group. Is this common in all laboratory animals, in other rodents, or is it unusual in this group?
Naturally occurring hydronephrosis actually is a very common incidental finding in a variety of laboratory rodents, both rats and mice. We've seen incidences between 40 and 70% in our colony.
Now, Carrie, if we turn to you, I wanted to ask you to comment on what you saw were perhaps more the most significant, important findings of this study.
I think probably the most surprising thing I found is this high incidence of spontaneous hydronephrosis in the Sprague-Dawley rats. And I was even more surprised when I looked at some of the literature that Amy and Deborah cited in the study, which showed that a number of other rat and mouse strains also exhibit it. So I think one of the major strengths of the study is the impact that it's going to have on the research community studying cardiovascular reflexes, since so many of us use this animal model. So my question for Amy and Deborah is, what cautions would you give to researchers using the strain for their own studies? And have your findings impacted the way you're interpreting and analyzing your baroreflex data now?
I think the study should warn other investigators to pay attention to the kidneys, even if that's not the predominant organ of interest in their studies.
You regularly exclude animals that you find have hydronephrosis after the study's over then?
Yes. In most of our other studies, we would exclude those, given that we are normally looking at some component of either kidney function or autonomic function, if not both.
That's a caution to be sent, really, then, to the entire scientific community.
I have just a question on some interpretation of the data. So I saw that in the discussion you speculated that an overactivation of the renin-angiotensin system might be responsible for the deficits that you saw in baroreflex sensitivity in the rats with hydronephrosis. And if I'm interpreting your comments appropriately, then I would suggest that your hypothesis was based on the evidence that injection of the AT1 receptor antagonist candesartan into the NTS improved the baroreflex sensitivity in the hydronephrotic animals, but it also improved it to the same extent in the control animals, and then not at all in the animals with more severe pathology. So I wondered how you speculate this pattern of results fits into your hypothetical model of overactive RAS.
We've known for a long time that in normotensive animals, if you inject an AT1 receptor blocker into the solitary tract nucleus, you do get a 30 to 40% facilitation of the baroreflex, which is indicative of an endogenous angiotensin II tone that's normally suppressing the reflex. In the animals with mild to moderate hydronephrosis, we saw an even greater increase in the baroreflex sensitivity with candesartan injection, suggesting that there may be an even greater increased angiotensin II contributing to baroreflex suppression in those animals. In the animals with severe hydronephrosis, we didn't see an effect on the bear reflex in response to candesartan. At this point, we're not sure whether that's because there's angiotensin II independent mechanisms contributing to the reflex suppression in those animals, or this response reminds us of our transgenic animals that are hypertensive, in where we know that there's increased angiotensin II contribution in the brain, but there's no response to candesartan in those animals, perhaps due to functional or signaling changes that have occurred in response to the long-term exposure to angiotensin II levels. So that's still something we need to investigate in the severe hydronephrosis.
In your anesthetized animals, the hydronephrosis seemed to cause an increase in the resting heart rate. Can you talk a little bit about that elevated resting heart rate and what you think that means?
Sure. In the rat, the heart rate is under tonic control by the parasympathetic nervous system. So we believe that that elevation in heart rate represents a decrease in vagal function, which is consistent with our finding for reduced vagal component of the bear reflex, as well as reduced heart rate variability.
And I wondered if you would want to talk a little bit of how you conceived of this project. Why did you look for the central defect in these animals with hydronephrosis?
Amy was noticing that in those experiments where the animals subsequently were shown to have hydronephrosis, the resting bear reflex was lower. These were studies where she was already looking at the effects of other agents on the bear reflex in terms of actions within the solitary tract nucleus. And so it was an observation that she made that resting reflex function was low that I think triggered us to then investigate why that might be. And of course, our first suspicion was that it might be angiotensin II levels in the NTS, which subsequently made us look at those circulating and urinary levels of the peptides as well.
And Carrie, did you have any other questions for either of the authors?
Just one. I was noticing you have some very compelling data showing that deficits in the parasympathetic component of the heart rate bearer reflex are responsible for the deficits that you saw in the hydronephrotic rats. And this is also a characteristic of aging. And I noticed that your rats are just a little bit older than what you might typically find for studies looking at bear reflex control in young adult rats. Usually those are, you know, younger than 12 weeks old, and you're looking at 3 to 5 months of age. So I wondered if you were able to rule out an effect of normal aging on the bear reflex and on hydronephrosis.
We have done studies in aging, and the reflex actually falls to about the level we see in these hydronephrotic animals, but at a much later time, approximately a year to a year and a half of age, we start to see the reduction of the reflex to about 50% of normal. So we think this is well before the age-related changes may occur. We don't really know whether it's a congenital thing or whether it is related to obstructions, and we don't know how long and to what extent the hydronephrosis will progress in this model.
Have you considered doing an experimental model where you induce hydronephrosis to see if that also influences bear reflex function? I'm just wondering how you would get at defining a causal link as opposed to just an association at this point.
One of the things for the future that I believe this study may lead us to is looking more closely at some of the timing and at some of the brain components of the renin-angiotensin system to truly prove our hypothesis that there is an overactivity of the system that might even be underlying the severe hydronephrosis autonomic profile, even though the candesartan doesn't reverse the effects.
Amy, did you have anything that you wanted to bring out or what you thought of as the take-home message for the study?
The big take-home message was that spontaneous hydronephrosis appears to be associated with impairments in autonomic regulation of the heart, like Carrie said, that are primarily involving reductions in vagal function. And it was surprising that these appear to be independent of activation of at least the peripheral renin-angiotensin system. So I was a little surprised that there was no changes in our indices of sympathetic function, that it was mostly vaguely mediated.
Well, in conclusion then, this study implies that cardiac regulation potentially should be seen as a complication of chronic hydronephrosis, and that anyone that works with laboratory animals, even those that are in the normal adult age range and not aged, should look for hydronephrosis as a possible complicating factor. And with that, I would like to thank Deborah and Amy and Carrie and Kara for their participation in this podcast.
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.